Welcome to the Reiki Show, hosted by Reiki authors Bronwyn and Fran Steiner, founders of the International House of Reiki. Find out more at www.reiki.net.au.
Hi, my name's Bronwyn.
And I'm Franz.
And today we have with us Vicky Quill. Vicky has a highly appropriate surname, Quill, as she is a calligrapher. And Vicky, she's always been a meditator and has studied no drama in Japan for 4 years, but she also studied for 8 years in Tokyo calligraphy. And she specializes in the ancient Chinese characters called the Oracle Bone characters. And she's also a member of the Oracle Bone Writing Association in Japan. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you.
Now, we hope today that Vicky will be able to help us find out a little bit more about the origins of Japanese kanji and how and why they were used. As most Reiki practitioners are aware, two of the four Reiki symbols and mantras are actual Japanese kanji. And we also hope that Vicky will be able to tell us a little bit more about living a Japanese art. Vicky, first off, could you tell us a little bit about the origins of kanji?
The origins of kanji are actually still somewhat shrouded in mystery. The characters were very, in the beginning, they were very pictographic, and they conveyed the sun, the moon, the natural elements very clearly. You can look at these ancient characters which were carved into the bone and shell and recognize a lot of the forms. Tree, root, rain, all of those natural elements are very, very recognizable. And then as the characters developed, they put those elements together to then make more complicated and sophisticated characters. And so it progressed. And so in the modern characters, which both the Chinese, of course the Chinese, but also the Japanese use, you still see those elements.
When you talk about the elements in the modern kanji, we can, by looking at the kanji, and I think that's really what you studied as well, we can kind of go back and feel the essence of the character.
That's right. You can connect. This is the extraordinary thing that Chinese has that no other language has, and I think I'm stating fact there and not just my opinion, that you can look at a word. If the element for sun or moon, for example, is in a modern character, that was used 2,000 years ago. It's an extraordinary system which connects you very deeply with the whole river of time as you're working with the characters. The beauty of the ancient characters is that they're not as abstract as the later developments. And for me, that's just quite extraordinary because it means that you are really working with something that, as a Westerner, as a non-Chinese native speaker, you can be working with these elements in a way that you directly understand. There's nothing abstract. There's no, oh, it's amazing, but what does it mean? There's none of that because you're right there at the source.
In your training, how were you taught how to connect to the source of these elements?
When I was working with the Oracle Bone Writing Association, shall I tell you a little bit how it worked, and then you get a picture
fantastic.
About it? Because this was a very, very dynamic group. And also, it was a group of people who were already, by and large, trained calligraphers. I was the exception. It was a very lively atmosphere where people would come from work, so there'd be a bit of beer or sake and sushi to kick things off. And then we'd sort of, you know, put ink in big bowls and big brushes. And so it was a group of people who were already quite established artists, and it wasn't a meditative atmosphere at all. When we worked mostly by ourselves. We had a dictionary of ancient characters that was our main source. And we'd take a character or two which interested us, and then we would get on with it. And then Kato Sensei used to sit there at his little table smoking away, and every so often he'd call out, your feet are like concrete, or I can't see your back, meaning make the line more three-dimensional. So it was quite theatrical, really. It was a very exciting way of studying. So with the connection, I asked him at times the difference between the way that we were working and the way that, say, the Zen calligraphers worked. But his approach was really, you're there or you're not. So calligraphy is over in a minute. It's over so quickly that you're either connecting with the moment or you're not. And I guess that's just up to each person as to how they go about it. In terms of connecting with characters, then I guess I've just developed over the years my whole approach to putting meditating and calligraphy together. First of all, I think that calligraphy and meditation go together very naturally. Calligraphy is such an elemental practice. You've just got the brush, ink and paper, or if you add the seal to give the life blood to it all as well. But however you work, whether you are an actual meditator at work with calligraphy or not, you're still trying to fill the line with life and with breath. You want that line to dance through the space of the white paper, to really jump out and talk to the person looking at it. And so in order to do that, you need to connect as deeply as possible with this internal landscape that you're expressing, however you interpret that, as an internal flow or as a pure emotion. So you just have yourself, your body, your hand, your heart, and then you have the brush, the paper, and the ink. And so with just those very few tools, you then take the black ink into action, as it were. And perhaps because I've got a performance background, I really think that calligraphy is very like performance, in that the act itself is over in a very short time. And it's what happens before you take the brush in hand that's important. And this is what we're talking about in terms of connecting with the kanji, connecting with the practice. Well, I personally like to spend a couple of hours sinking down as much as I can into a good space. And that process can involve preparation of ink, grinding, getting the materials ready, certainly doing some meditation, spending time outside where I usually work, just connecting with the air, the birds, the traffic, anything to feel very aware through my whole body. And then when I'm ready to get going, I'll sit and meditate for as long as it takes to fill my whole self with the word, to try and feel that through all of my senses. And in my case, because I've also got the dance and the movement background, as well as the spontaneous qigong, I'll sit or I'll stand or I'll move. Whatever I do, I'm just waiting for some kind of internal impulse. And I'm focusing on the channel through the body, from the hara to the heart to the hand. And that channel, you really, again, it doesn't really matter whether you're a meditator, you're working purely as an artist. You want that channel to be cleared as if you were unblocking the drain, so that the feeling, the emotion, can just course through that channel and express itself. And then I then think of the paper as if it was a three-dimensional space. And I think this idea of calligraphy as a black and white art where you want the two to really interact together, the white of the paper isn't neutral. And so I approach that as a real three-dimensional space, like a stage. And then you enter that paper with your brush, and with a good amount of focused attention, whether that's been meditation or just focusing your mind, you want the very center of the brush to express itself clearly on the paper as a line which has bone and muscle. And so for this to happen, somehow you have to feel into the very mass of your body. And for me, moving and meditating is how I do it. I suppose because calligraphy is such an elemental practice and it is over in such a short time, it really allows you to feel deeply into the flow of the image that you want to create or the feeling that you want to convey. So let's say you're working with the character for river, which is just three vertical lines expressing the, representing the flow of the river. You spend time feeling deeply into the kind of river that you want to create, whether it's a raging torrent or a gentle little brook. Whatever you are feeling, you want to truly, honestly connect with the nature of the river you've chosen, the emotion connected with it for you personally at that moment in time. And then you load your brush and you enter the paper as a protagonist and you be that river.
So in essence, it's about becoming one with the paper, with the ink, with the brush, with the river, and then really expressing that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The Chinese used to say that when you want to draw the mountain, you must be the mountain. And I think the thing about doing some kind of meditation practice or whatever it is, focusing deeply, connecting deeply with that thing, is that that can be truly possible. It's not an idea. It's not a concept. You can really feel that mountain in the mass of your body and then be it. Those moments, to be honest, don't happen all the time. There's just no way they're going to happen all the time. It's just one of and that's why the preparation is so important, and that's why I think it's like performance. It's in that, you know, in a practice period, say, of 5 hours, you might be absolutely deeply connected for, say, half an hour.
Ah, thank you. That was a really interesting explanation about it. Can you tell us as well a little bit about, you studied with some very interesting teachers in Japan. I'm very much interested in how traditional Japanese teachings have been transferred in some contemporary teaching. So a bit more opened up, how it's kind of been made easier for Westerners to access those teachings.
I think, first of all, of course, there's a generational gap happening in Japan, and a lot of my teachers are probably now well into their 60s, if they're even still alive. And those people very naturally draw from their traditional background. And I think that when people like Kato Koho do calligraphy, he's very much a contemporary calligrapher in Japan. But again, I think in the case of calligraphy, with it being such a simple, elemental practice, it really transcends time. That's an important factor. When I was studying movement with Noguchi Michizo, and I was doing Noguchi Taiso, his work was quite extraordinary because he was the head of the physical education department of Tokyo Fine Arts University. So it meant that all of the students there studying art, also music at that university, also opera as well at that university, they would all go through his movement department, so that even though by then he was well into his 70s, people were drawing on his work, which was again a very elemental practice of connecting with the earth through the vertical axis of the body. But he would also practice Zazen in the morning as a very basic practice for him. He was very interested in Ikebana as well. But to be in his studio doing movement, you wouldn't really know that, except essentially the essence of all of these practices, the essence of hara, the foundation of all Japanese culture, these things still carry weight and still come across as being very relevant.
How does a Westerner then connect to these traditional Japanese concepts such as